Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the allegedly less corrupt country in the world, in the Schwarzenegger sense of the world. And my very special guest today is known only by the nomenclature Manfred. Welcome to the program, the Wellness Mentor.
Hi, Vinnie. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, everybody's got a backstory. I'd like to hear yours. So if you would indulge me and the listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
Okay. So I was actually born and grown up in Austria and educated as a classical musician, which is very much a city lifestyle. And I got famous quite quickly and early in life, and I needed a break by the time I was 26 and traveled around the world, got to New Zealand and decided not to go back to my old life in Austria and did the opposite on the opposite side of the planet. So rather than being a city person and a classical musician, I became a busker and a minstrel, a free musician traveling the world, playing the flute with all kinds of bands and having a great time and learning a lot about health in the process, because in New Zealand I met people I would have never met in Austria. They were growing their own food, living on the land, having a great time. And as I got five planets in Sagittarius and I'm a fire monkey, so whatever I do quite intense and extreme. So after a while of learning about health and how the body works and a lot about nutrition, I decided that if you really want to be healthy, you got to grow your own food and live in the garden. And I wasn't going to wait till I had the money to buy the land. There was enough land in New Zealand to find a place where nobody wanted to live and just live there and grow food and be happy forever after.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I was just thinking in terms of New Zealand yesterday, just the abundance of places we have where no one wants to live.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, in Austria, I wouldn't have lasted 3 days in a place like this without being moved on. And in New Zealand, I stayed in one place in the Buller Gorge in the South Island for 10 years. And nobody ever said, "What are you doing here?" or "Move on." And when I parked up there, I didn't know how long it would last. And, you know, being a man of the moment, I was there for good. I was there forever.
Have you noticed whenever you're doing what you're dreaming or whatever kind of needs to be done, impediments just sort of disappear?
Yeah,
And all these little weird mystical helping hands come out of the woodwork to not start your journey. You have to do that by yourself, but they prop you up along the way. Like, you couldn't continue without these little helping factors. I'm acting under the assumption that you were there. A lot of people knew you were there, and there was some kind of community support, or was it all roughing it alone sort of thing?
I would have liked that community support. Like, you know, human nature is that we are tribal. And I was looking for the tribe who wanted to live outside this crazy system and without money and go back to the land and really do it without being on the dole or, you know, growing dope or anything that a lot of other people did, right? I really wanted to step out of that whole system and go back to nature and be real human being connected to the earth. And I thought that a lot of people would want that lifestyle. But this was 30 years ago in the 80s. So people weren't ready for that. You know, even my friends, the musicians, wanted me to be on the dole like them. And that wasn't me. So I moved there waiting for the tribe. And 10 years later, moved out, giving up on the tribe that wanted to live without money. And did something else. So there's quite a few really long stories in that process, of course, but we haven't got time here for all that.
Trust me, we do.
Basically, what happened was I spent a couple of years by myself as a hermit on a plateau in the Buller Gorge looking down on the river. And in Europe, that place would have had a castle on it, or at least the ruins of a castle. And in New Zealand, it was untouched. And just because a fire went through, there was no trees on that plateau, and I parked up my house truck there and started planting a garden. And after quite some time by myself, I had a few realizations. And the main one was that the negativity that I put on the world and on other people and the authorities that I was moving away from, the whole negativity was still in my head. I was still, the world was still a bad place all day long in my head, and I was still not good enough. And while I was running away from people who made me feel like I wasn't good enough, after a couple of years by myself, not being good enough every day, I had that realization that basically the essence of the realization was that I got ripped off by the conditioning that said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. But those same people haven't taught me how to love myself. In fact, they made loving myself a bad thing, a selfish thing. And if I stood outside the church in my hometown as a kid with a sign around my neck saying I love myself, they would have put me away and I would have never got to New Zealand. So the loving yourself was a total no-no, but the expectation was to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And that's the problem in this human condition, that we don't know how to love ourselves. And in fact, it's a bad thing.
We know how to be selfish and materialistic, and we think that benign narcissism and the desire to achieve and better mankind is a really selfish and egotistical thing that should be stamped out and criticized at every turn. Is that about right?
Yeah, and we pretend not to be selfish in order to be good, and all day long we're really not good enough. So that feeling of not good enough is very close to the surface in us.
Well, I came up with a really profound realization over the weekend, Manfred. Never underestimate a man's ability to play mind games with himself and win.
Yes, that's a good one. So while I was working that out, that my concept of love was actually flawed, because you can't love anybody else outside of yourself more than you love yourself. And if you don't love yourself, then anybody you love will make you feel inadequate and not good enough. And that's why relationships never lasted. So when I realized that, I was kind of ready for love, for for a real relationship. And I decided I'm going to go out there and find a woman that was extreme enough to live with me in the middle of nowhere. And I did. It wasn't hard. I found a woman that was looking for me. And so then there was two hermits.
Wow.
Living together peacefully, working on the love between man and woman and why it used to always fail. And our agreement was you have no right to be unhappy ever. And it's taking away the right to be unhappy in a relationship, you know, where you're unhappy because of what the other one did or didn't do or said or didn't say, you know. And we've taken that as our commitment for our relationship. We've got no right to be unhappy ever. That doesn't mean you can't be unhappy, but you've got no right to put it on the other one. And, hey, this is 23 years later now, and we've never argued because we look after our own backyard, keep that clean, instead of complaining about the other one. So that really worked well.
It's interesting. Relationships is like an episode of the New Zealand television series, Neighbours at War, where the one person who really has a problem with the fence line is the one who happens to be a hoarder.
Yeah. And there's plenty of them in New Zealand.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? We always see the problems outside of ourselves and we don't realize that a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times, the problems we're experiencing in our own lives and the problems we've got with other people are actually just us really being pissed off at ourselves and we want somebody else to blame. And we don't realize that actually that's not fair. You can't blame everybody else for your own problems that you can solve yourself.
That's right. And no, my truth is that I'm creating my life. I'm the center of my universe, so everything that happens in my universe is my creation. And if I don't like it, I have to change, not everybody else has to change. And that worked for me very well. So we were in that setting in the Upper Buller Gorge for 10 years, my wife and I for 8 years, but I was there for 10. And we were there for good, you know, like it was like idyllic. It was a very work-intensive lifestyle, but we were happy to do that, 16 hours a day running for survival just to sit down and eat the meal that we grew, you know. And I was the richest man on the planet without money because I knew the richest man on the planet could never eat that food that I had for dinner. And so that was my happiness and my paradise. And then my wife, who was hormonally infertile all her life and was 47 at that time, thought she had early menopause. And because she's been infertile, nothing else really came up at all in her mind. But after about 3 months, that menopause started behaving rather strangely. It started moving around. And eventually we had to realize that we're going to have a baby. So that changed everything again. You know, there was many turns in my life where it changed 180 degrees. This was one of those. And our idyllic lifestyle was, of course, not sustainable with bringing up one child in the middle of nowhere with two adults. So from that moment where we realized Anna was pregnant, it was clear that our time in our paradise was limited and we had to get back out into the world and bring up a child and make money and get it together in the world again. And so for 2 years, I knew I had 2 years to, you know, because when the baby grows up until the 2 years, they don't really need anybody else. But when they're two and after that, they need other kids and the society really to grow up into. So in those 2 years, I came up with several ideas of what I could do other than going back to the old comfort zone with my qualifications, and which all involved living in a city, being a conductor and a flautist and a classical musician, you know, music teacher, whatever I could have done I would have had to move back into a city lifestyle, which I wasn't prepared to do. And any other ideas I had how we could make money all involved money. You know, they say it takes money to make money. And so I didn't have any money. We've been 10 years, well, I've been 15 years because I've been traveling before that, outside the money system, totally, right? So making whatever I needed from busking. And we lived on next to no money. You know, we bought olive oil and grains. We bartered for things with the grain farmer. We'd go and work there and come home with grains. And so from coming out of the bush with 40, and my wife was 47, I was 40, and we had this baby with no assets, no bank account, nothing, right? And no inheritance coming. So I had to reinvent myself. And every time Anna said to me, "What do you want to do in the world?" I said, "I want to talk about love, because I know we got ripped off in our education, in our whole conditioning. The love was wrong. And since every human being is looking for love, but they're looking outside that somebody else loves them, you know, I wanted to teach that." And it was kind of the most silly thing to say when you're sitting in the middle of nowhere, you've got the baby growing up, and the conversation is about how we're going to make money, and the man of the house says, "I want to talk about love." But I didn't compromise. I knew this was the most important thing I could deliver to humanity in my life, is to make people aware that the concept of love is wrong in our head and has been wrong for many generations. And that's why we have all these troubles. So, but how to turn this into money, you know, it was kind of impossible. Even though I had very strong, "This is all I want to do," but who's going to listen to me and who's going to pay me for it? And so that was 2 years of holding that space for something to come into my life where I could talk about love and get paid for it and make a lot of money, because I grew up with a single mother, and now she saved from the food, she saved on everything so that we could have a holiday. But during the year, everything I wanted, we couldn't afford. And I got what I needed. We weren't totally poor, but there were so many times I wanted something, and the answer was, "We can't afford this." And of course, as a traveling musician, I saw a lot of that. No, the people I was with, their kids wanted something. "Oh, now we can't afford this, we can't afford that." And all of a sudden, here I am having a kid. And I never wanted to have to say no because we can't afford it. I wanted to say no for real reasons, but not about money. So here I am with nothing and wanting to create an income so I could bring up my child and never have to say we can't afford this. It was a pretty impossible goal at the time, it seemed, you know. And then this beautiful young man and a young woman came up on our plateau that were friends of friends who told them we were there, and they were on the way to the West Coast. And this guy, Brandon, they stayed overnight, and we had these interesting conversations about money. And he said things like, Buckminster Fuller in the 80s calculated all the money that was on the planet and all the people. And he figured out what, if he gave everybody their fair share, how much money that was. Have you got any idea how much that was then in the 80s?
I really have absolutely no idea.
Because, you know, of course, all this time since the 80s, the printing presses have been printing money 24/7. So there's a lot more money now. And
well, even worse than that, they haven't been printing anything. They've just been making up digital currency, and there's like quadrillions of derivative debt or something like there, which is, I think, more than the physical wealth of the world, like six times over, and these bankers just made it up out of thin air. And so... Yeah. they're going to use it as a debt cloud to just basically suck everybody in, and eventually we'll all be slaves owned by somebody else. That's their plan. I've got different plans of my own, though.
We've all been slaves for a long time on that level. It's never changed. It just invented money to make us feel a bit better.
Yeah, I mean, like, how much more free is a free-range chicken versus a cage chicken? Right? Maybe a bit more free? Or is it still just a slave chicken?
Yeah.
We're just free-range. When
you really know what free-range chicken means, yeah, it's not much different. But in the 80s, they were still printing money. It was a bit closer to the real, no? It was maybe no longer backed up by gold in the 80s already, but pretty close.
This is when John Key was in the stock market.
So Buckminster Fuller was a very, very intelligent man, and he figured it out in whichever way he did that, that if he gave everybody their fair share, it would be $16 million. $16 million. And so this beautiful young man's telling me that, and I've been living without money for 15 years, and I'm thinking, gosh, somebody else has got my share, and I don't really like what they're doing with it. And then the next thought was, gosh, if you now, right now, gave everybody on the planet their $16 million and said, here you go, here's your fair share, and divided all the money equally by the people, and then you put yourself up on the moon and look down, what you would see is how the money flows, just as a mental picture, really. You know? You would see the money very quickly flowing back to the same people. Because there's only a few people on this planet who are financially literate. They understand money. They understand the flow of money. And money is one thing, wealth is another. I always say wealth is what you've got when somebody takes all your money away. But there's people who are financially educated, and they will suck that money right back out of the population, and it will be in the same pockets where it is now. And so we had this interesting conversation, and he was saying, well, there's a new paradigm developing in business where people like me, and him, he was obviously doing it, and he was talking to me about it. He said, there's a whole new paradigm in business that's cooperative, where people who really want to make a difference on the planet can actually attract that money and do something better with it than where that money is now. And I really liked the young man, and I liked the conversation. And he introduced me to this concept of what we know as network marketing. And I had no idea. I was a musician. I never sold anything. I definitely wasn't into sales and marketing and all that. But I was into the redistribution of wealth. And at that point, because I loved myself, I knew that I deserved my fair share, you know, 16 million or not, that wasn't the issue. Yeah? But I deserved the money to bring up my child and show her that this is actually a good world, a good planet. Because I went all the way to the other side of the world from where I grew up, running away from the bad things. And as I said before, realizing the bad things were still all in my head. So now I had to change my story about money, because before that time, I said, if somebody walked in here into my plateau with a $1 million suitcase, I'd tell them to take it away. I wouldn't say, oh, just leave me a few thousand so I can have a comfortable life or something. I didn't want anything to do with money. And now the story changed to, I need the money to bring up my daughter. And therefore, I had to open up and walk against that big wave of negativity that I put out and say, okay, so if we do it the right way, I actually deserve money coming my way so I can make a difference on the planet. Not just bring up my family safely, you know, and get a mortgage and all. I didn't want any of that. And so that conversation was very stimulating. And I actually joined a network marketing company that this young man was in. And it was quite an experience because it was like day and night, really, the guy I was to the guy I had to become to be successful, and in the whole process not sell my soul for the money because I wasn't going to do that. So this is now 16 years later. You know, my daughter is now 18. We moved out of the Buller Gorge to Golden Bay, which for a lot of people, that's really remote, like, you know, 12 minutes out of Takaka towards the end of the world, I call it, when you go from Takaka to Collingwood and then to the Farewell Spit, and there's the end of the road. And that's remote for some people, but for us, coming out of the Buller Gorge, that was moving back into the world. And from there, I basically built myself a very successful business and felt good every day about the money I'm making comes from making a difference on the planet by giving people something that I know they need and they don't know it necessarily. Very few people then, this is now 16 years ago, very few people knew then that what isn't in the soil isn't in the food we eat and therefore isn't in our body, and our bodies are mineral deficient. And I make a step back because when we realized that was when Anna was pregnant, and while we did a home birth in the middle of nowhere, we did have to have a midwife because she was 47. And so midwife brings with her all the medical paradigm and the whole system. And so she did a blood test, came back and gave her mineral tablets and said, "You're very mineral deficient." And we were the healthiest, happiest people on the planet. There was no way there was anything wrong with us. And definitely I wouldn't trust the medical diagnosis like that. So we went off to some friends of ours who were natural health practitioners, chiropractor, naturopaths, and so on, and got both of us tested in many weird and wonderful ways by our good friends. And whatever they tried, you know, whatever they tested us on, the outcome was we were both very mineral deficient. So with that goes a little warning to the young people out there whose idealism says eat local. Well, we did that so extreme that when you for 10 years eat local only from a soil that's very deficient, because New Zealand soil isn't very rich in minerals, right?
Yeah, certainly, and doesn't have selenium. Not good for pregnancy when they're doing lambing and things of that nature. The New Zealand farmers have learned to supplement the sheep feed with selenium tablets, and that instead of getting 30% stillbirth, they only get about 1%. It's quite an interesting one. I'm sorry, Manfred, we're going to have to go to a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Remember that this is listener-supported radio, so if you want to support this and make sure this kind of dialoguing and interesting stories about people's lives that might trigger something for you and actually mean something to your life and what have you, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And make a donation or start up a subscription. I said that really weird, I know. Oh, there's also a Kiwi Bank account there as well, plus a whole bunch of great sponsors. And if you listen to this show on the radio off the website with the MP3s, there's also YouTube versions available. There's a YouTube link on the homepage, and there are also other radio stations all around New Zealand that play this show regularly as well. And that's under the affiliates on the website as well. We'll be right back. Don't you go anywhere.
We can.
with Manfred, the wellness mentor, and you were talking about how a lot of people let me just say, this is a very, very widely experienced phenomenon. People letting their idealism get in the way of the facts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was what you were just talking about. And this is kind of universal, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's one of the, I call it the human condition.
Oh, in fact, I made a point about that earlier. I said that love and compassion are much a part of human nature and the human condition as, say, like incompetence or fear and pain. But we usually only mention it when we equate it to the fear and pain and the negative things.
Mm.
Why is that? I think we've got our priorities upside down.
We should do. As generalization, yes. So we got to the minerals in the soil, and, you know, like most New Zealanders by now know there's no selenium anywhere in New Zealand in the soil. But selenium is just one trace element, and you mentioned, you know, the laming and the success rate with supplementing selenium. Well, that is huge, but that's what the difference it can make to have one trace element or not have it. Well, there's lots of trace elements missing in the New Zealand soil, and there's more and more talk about it. And especially the way we grow commercial food, what you get in the supermarket looks like food, but there's no nutrition in it. And that's why we got obesity, because we got an epidemic of overeating while starving, because there's nothing in it. And so on. People craving more hollow food. But we were eating the best food on the planet. We were eating fresh out of our own biodynamic garden. We made such an effort putting seaweed on the compost and eating seaweed every day. We were the last people who should be mineral deficient. I could not believe it. But when I tested it with my three close friends, they wouldn't make that up. And they did different methods of testing. And so I had to give in and realize, okay, we both actually really deficient. And it slowly made sense. But once I accepted that we were deficient, well, the pills that the midwife gave Anna, that wasn't food. That was something made in a laboratory. That had no place in our lifestyle. We had no pills. And so I was looking at whole food. And in those days, the only thing I could get for Anna while she was pregnant was a product called Floradix, which most people know, most women know about it at least. And Floradix, of course, is made from vegetables, fruits and vegetables grown in Germany after Chernobyl. So here I am in New Zealand, got away from Chernobyl as far as I could, being rather happy about that. I left before Chernobyl happened. And here we are now, my wife's pregnant, and she's consuming European vegetables after Chernobyl as the best supplement we could find. So by the time it took probably 2 years, 2 years after she was pregnant, I heard about this other product that I'm really passionate about now, but I wish we would have had it at the time when Anna was pregnant, or when we both needed minerals all of a sudden. So it took me quite a while to find a product that was food, right? Floradix is food, but it came from the wrong place. So I looked and looked and looked for mineral supplementation. How can we get minerals in our cells that are not in the soil and not in the food? And the farmers know about it. The gardeners know about how important minerals are in the soil, but the doctors don't know anything about minerals. There's no doctor who will say, oh, you need a liquid organic whole food mineral supplement to make sure you get all these trace elements that are not in your food. So that's basically what I found and got really passionate about and started distributing this product called Body Balance. And that was 16 years ago, and it was hard then because most people weren't aware of mineral deficiency yet. But I had enough passion and I was fresh, you know, like people have all kinds of opinions about money and supplements and especially network marketing and all those issues that I found out. I had no idea. I've been in the bush for 10 years and 15 years outside the system. But I had enough passion to make this business happen. And 16 years later, here I am. I've been around the world with my daughter several times, you know, visiting my family in Austria and coming over here to the States, where I'm actually speaking from now, because I'm over here to work with that company that's a 30-year-old company in San Diego, family-owned, and I know the family very well by now. And we're just working on another product, another whole company that we're developing that's addressing the epidemic that's out there of now, when I was young, when I was a music teacher in Austria, I drank 15 cups of coffee a day. That was just filtered coffee. You know, you go in the teacher's room every break and have 2 cups of coffee with milk and 3 teaspoons of sugar. And that was 45 spoons of sugar a day just in my coffee, just at work. No, and nobody said you're crazy. That was just normal. Everybody else did. And I smoked 2 cigarettes in every break. You know, 2 cigarettes, 2 cups of coffee, and go into another 50 minutes. That was normal. I can't believe it now when I look back at that. But that was that was how, in Austria as a music teacher, that's what you did. And then, of course, eat lots of cakes and lots of sweets as well. So the amount of sugar. And now I know that sugar is one of the worst enemies of human health. And it's just got worse and worse and worse. So when people started drinking espresso coffees, more than 3 a day, and eventually the coffee didn't do it anymore. So what comes next is these energy drinks, Red Bull, V, and whatever they're called. You know, the cheaper ones are much worse because it's only cheaper because of the ingredients being real rubbish. And so we started coming up with the idea a while ago that the part of people being so unhealthy is that they're craving energy. And the true energy for the body comes from the minerals in the food. If there's no minerals in the food, there's no energy in that food. So then we get energy from stimulants like coffee and sugar and whatever other substances for apparent energy. But it's like borrowing energy from your own future, right? So we're not only in debt on our credit card to the bankers, that's one debt, but we're in debt to our body by borrowing energy from our body's future when we have stimulants, right? And that's a whole story I could I'm very passionate about it, and I could talk about it for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, see, I've tried the Body Balance on a lot of their products, and they're quite amazing. And in fact, I was thinking about this about a week ago, about the relationship in terms of effects on the body that huge effective nutrition has versus drugs or stimulants. You know, and it turns out that if you're, let's say, incredibly healthy and you're getting in nutrients, minerals, or your sunlight and everything the body needs every day, omega fatty acids, there's basically like a hell of a lot you really need to be thinking about. Everywhere from what you're sleeping in, or if you've got a clock radio next to your bed, which shoots up your adrenal gland systems in the morning with that sharp alarm, or whether you're getting bathed in EMF radiation by it, or anything else. You basically just imagine for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, that you are at war, that the authorities and the medical establishment and the government and everybody else in the media have basically declared war on your health. And they are trying to kill you in every single way, in every single minute of every single day. That's how much mindfulness you need about your health, in my opinion, if you want to get on top of it. And I'm still not on top of it myself. That's how bad it is. Yeah. All right. And I think what the main principle here is, there's actually too much to think about. Conveniently, this is the great thing about capitalism, is that there's people out there who think, how can I stop you having to think about, I don't know, maybe 20 out of the 1,000 things that you need to do? Oh, here's a multivitamin. What about if you wanted to get rid of 10,000 of those 100,000 things you've got to worry about? Oh, here's a way. What about if we're talking about everything? How many different products would it be? It'd be quite a lot. That's the problem. You've got to take personal responsibility. You've got to live your life in a way that is actually supportive to your health rather than detrimental to your health. And I think actually the main thing is not about realizing what you're putting in and its nutritional value per se, but if you're living in an urban center, the main thing is simply to avoid the things that you know are toxic and dangerous, which are everywhere.
So as a wellness mentor, the difference for me between a coach and a mentor, like if I go further back, 30 years ago or 20 years ago, if you met me, I knew everything you should do, and I was preaching to people. No, I didn't make any money out of it. I was just so passionately into health that everybody had to hear about it. And there was there's always those people around who tell everybody what to eat and what not to eat and what's good for them. And so that's just when you're young and passionate and you're sharing what is your truth and you put it on everybody else, right? Then I became a bit older and I became a coach where I would help people when they asked, right? And the wellness mentor to me means, as a mentor, I support people on their journey. I don't tell them what to do. But the simple thing that is part of this mentorship is, if I asked you, write down what you eat, what you drink, how much you sleep for just a few days. 3 days is enough, but a week would be more ideal, right? And then I get you, not me, I get you to look at what you've written down and I say, well, which of those things do you know are good for you and which of those things you do every day are not so good for you? And everybody knows, right? Not in detail, but it's enough. What you already know is enough to look at, okay, the coffee isn't good for me, the alcohol, the tobacco, the not enough sleep, on and on and on. These simple things we all do every day, you know? And then I'd say to you, so if you do less of the things that you know are not good for you and more of the things that you know that are good for you, your life will change. And rather than saying something really radical like everything you eat is rubbish and you should eat something completely different, that's too hard for people. But eating a little bit less rubbish, smoking a little bit less, drinking a little bit less, and sleeping a little bit more, and just drinking a little bit more water would get you into a better place. And from the better place, you can become even better, and then better, and then better. But letting people make their own steps. And as the wellness mentor, I'd just be like a mirror. I'd say, okay, you can talk to me about the changes you're going to make and then check back in with me telling me the changes you actually made. And you're not doing it for me, right? And I'm not pushing. I'm just holding up the mirror, basically. And
it sounds very similar to the psychology method of the Ross Institute. They tell you, you know how a lot of people have like past grievances and things like that and they feel really guilty about it. In a lot of cases they just ask them, so why do you feel guilty? What did you specifically do? Oh, I allowed myself to be really did you allow yourself to be raped, or did you just get raped and there was nothing you could do about it? Well, there was nothing I could do about it. Okay, do you feel guilty about that anyway, even though you didn't actually do it? Like, yeah, well, how long do you feel that you need to feel guilty about it for? You know, just very simply putting it in a logical step. And in that way, you're not actually forcing people who are deeply traumatized. And I think, in my opinion, having an excess of body toxicity is a form of trauma.
It is.
A constant. Just like all other traumas, they're constant and you learn to live with them, whether they're past, future, or present, like anxiety, depression, and just pain right here and now.
it is like a war inside. We're fueling the war inside, and we're looking at war outside, and we don't like it, but we're doing it inside through what we put in there and what we don't put in there. So after years of helping people with their health, I realized that most people aren't really into like, I'm not into health and wellness. I'm into optimum well-being, right? So there's no end to the journey towards optimum well-being. It's like a carrot on a stick, you know? It's the better I get, the more I can see other more things that I can change. And this has been going on for 30 years for me, right? So I'm saying it's like a carrot on a stick. In a way, you can never reach that optimum well-being, because the higher up the mountain you go, the further you can see, right, on a clear day. And so after 30 years and being fully passionately on this journey, I can still do things to fine-tune. I still do things I shouldn't be doing, you know, that I know if I didn't do those, I'd be even better off. And then I do a few steps in that direction, you know, on a regular basis. Like, there's times I drink beer, and then I like the beer, and then I drink more and more and more and more and more often. And then I go, okay, I have to let that go. And being, as I said, Sagittarian fire monkey, I do extreme things. I stop drinking, or I stop smoking, or I drink a lot of water and do long fasts. I used to do long fasts. I'm not into fasting now. I wouldn't suggest it. It's too extreme. So I'm now in my close to my 60s. I'm less and less extreme, and I realized that a lot of the what I thought was health improvements that I did in my younger years were actually quite extreme and quite unhealthy. So the key word in all of this wellness talk is really balance, finding the balance. And that's why finding a product called Body Balance, you know, the company called Life Force, those two things is all we need more, more life force, more balance. And that brings me to the Chinese term for life force is qi, right? And about 12 years ago, I met the Chinese Qigong master who moved from China to Wellington and came to the South Island, did a talk. And I've been studying with him now for the last 12 years, Qigong. And the Chinese have got the best wellness knowledge on the planet. I have no doubt about it. I've studied a lot with Western teachers. And everything we know about wellness, the Chinese know in more detail. That's how they got to acupuncture, right?
I would say that would make sense. After all, they've got thousands of years of history that didn't get destroyed and taken over and then lost and what have you.
Yeah, 8,000 years of wellness history. And, of course, now it's all pretty much being destroyed. Just like in the West, the pharmaceutical companies have taken over our health, right? And well, Chinese.
What did it happen? It was the. Have you heard of the Flexner Report?
No, I haven't heard before.
Well, it's like in the 1800s or something, the Rockefeller Health Foundation sent this dude named Flexner around to all of the different medical institutions, whether they be allopathic medicine, homeopathy, naturopathy, all these various eclectic disciplines. And what they do is rank them as being either very good or not very good. And so naturally, he only gave the allopathic universities that were selling, incidentally, Rockefeller oil-derived derivatives, frickin' pharmaceutical drugs, high rankings, and gave everybody else the shaft. More or less destroyed and took over the Western medical industry. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen in China.
But
it's now it's happening.
It's now happening in China.
Yeah, see? It's like a little bit of a delay.
They are now treating the Chinese herbs in the same way as our pharmaceuticals from herbal medicine, which we had. All traditional medicine was herbal. They're now standardizing and, you know, synthesizing and whatever those things are. But they're taken over by the state, and very much regulated and controlled and all that stuff. Well, the main thing with healing is intuition, not intellectual knowledge. It's the intuition of the healer that's the healing, not the substance. And so, like in the old days, the woman would go out on the full moon or on the new moon or on whatever moon for specific herbs and specific parts of that plant for specific things. And it was because they had a patient with a problem, they would go and find the answer in nature by intuition. Then they learned, okay, for that problem, I go on that day when the moon is in that sign. And they had the moon up in the sky. We now have it on a calendar. And when the calendar says the moon is in a certain star sign and you look up, it's not even true. But we don't notice because we can't read the sky anymore because we look at the watch on our wrist. And now we don't have it on the wrist. We have it on the cell phone, right?
Well, so, you know, it's like the last...
so far removed from nature.
Yeah, it's kind of like the last days of the Bible said, you know, you get destroyed by a lack of knowledge. And that seems to be kind of true and working out in good step. Not that I say that the Bible is the be-all and end-all of all knowledge, you know. If you want to say one book is all the only knowledge that matters, there's quite a few other. Apparently, there's libraries full of knowledge, you know, that you can absorb.
And lots of libraries have been burned down to make sure there's only one book left.
Especially the Library of Alexandria, which apparently had all the knowledge of the ancient world, including the giants and the aliens that created our race and everything, which is now all stored in the Vatican because the Romans weren't stupid enough to burn up all the knowledge, only just smart enough to make everybody think that there was no knowledge left. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This is a listener-supported broadcast, and also we have a few sponsors on the homepage there. We have a number of books. The Crowdfunding Revolution by Kevin Lawton is one to look at as well, because there's a number of ways of making money, and most of them involve shafting people and selling them crap and then cutting corners and what have you. That's how you become obscenely rich. If you want to do that real quick, don't listen to the show. Don't do anything other. Go to university and hang out with psychopaths and they'll infect you and become one of them like some kind of a business vampire. All right, go for your life, son. Go for your life. There's plenty of them around. However, if you want to do something right by the world and you want to make money the old-fashioned way by actually making it happen from the community up and what have you, you go have a look at that book, The Crowdfunding Revolution by Kevin Lawton. There's also an interview that I did with him, so if you can search that, that would be great. There's another one there as well called... Shoot. In fact, I totally messed that up because I need to have a break in a WikiLeak. We'll be right back.